It's Wednesday, Jordan.
It sure is. We are going to talk about the baseball. We have a special guest, Eitan Levine, joining us to talk about special first pitches. And we have some unfortunate injury news. The Rays City Canucks are undefeated, and the Astros might still stink. All that and more on today's episode of Baseball Barbercast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world that once threw a ceremonial first pitch behind the back. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and there will be quite a bit of chatter about first pitches on today's podcast with our special guest.
Yes, looking forward to that. I know that we have had a couple opportunities. I'm sure we'll talk about that with Eitan, our special guest, who is trying to set a ceremonial first pitch world record. So that will be our guest segment later on today on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbercast. But we do have some baseball to discuss. I am in Cincinnati. I saw the Arizona Diamondbacks last night, and I will see them again today on Wednesday. You saw the New York Yankees push the Houston Astros around. Boy, did that have got to feel good for the Yankees in New York. So we'll talk about what we saw with our own two eyes. And Jake, apparently what we couldn't see with our own two eyes. More on that later. But let's begin with the baseball before we get to our special guests, because it was a busy day. It's Tuesday. It's a full slate. We got a lot of teams in action, and let's start with what we were in the building for.
So I was in the building last night, Yankee Stadium, Yankees Astros. The Yankees are good. The Astros are not. About a year and a half ago, after the 2022 ALCS, in which the Houston Astros pulverized the New York Yankees in a brisk sweep, granted three of those games were one-run affairs, but it was pretty definitive. Aaron Boone expressed to the media that there was a legitimate gap in quality between the New York Yankees and the Houston Astros. The quote, I'm now paraphrasing, was something like, they're the standard, we need to catch up to where they are. Do you remember this?
I do, yeah.
Yesterday, at the pregame press conference, yours truly, Jake Mintz, I asked Aaron Boone, I said, Mr. Boone, you said this 2 years ago. Has that gap closed? Do you think that gap is closed? And now Aaron Boone is not going to sit there up on that dais, and he's not going to say the Astros are butt and we're bomb. That's not how these guys do things. But in so many words, he conveyed that he believed the Astros pitching right now is pretty butt. And he did so by complimenting the pitching staff of the 2022 Astros, which, by the way, that team could chuck that pill.
It sure deserved it. Yep.
But by comparison, these Astros, particularly the starting rotation, has been quite flimsy. Last night was supposed to be the stopper. It was Justin Verlander, the future Hall of Famer, the Astros' best starting pitcher, probably. You could talk to me about Framber Valdez, whatever. It was supposed to be the Astros number one against the Yankees number five, Luis Gil. And instead, it was a mismatch. The Yankees kicking the snot out of Houston by a final score, I believe, of 10-3. Is that where it finished?
Yep.
I left in the fifth. By a final score of 10-3 in what felt like the beginning of a funeral for the Houston Astros dynasty. Verlander allowing three home runs, a three-run shot in the first to Alex Verdugo, a classic Yankee Stadium pop-up, opposite field, right field, short porch, Anthony Volpe. And Giancarlo Stanton made up for that by disintegrating a baseball, I believe 118 miles an hour off the bat, the single hardest hit ball Justin Verlander has allowed in the StatCast era, in his entire StatCast career, which is a phrase that we use. As a whole, it felt very definitive. I think being around the Astros pregame, I got the sense that they still think they're good. I think they are. I think the Astros are good. However, they have certainly dug themselves quite a hole to climb out of. They are now 11 games under 500. And yesterday's performance against New York did not feel like the beginning of a turnaround.
Yeah, and they are now in all alone in last place, I believe, after the Angels beat the Pirates on Tuesday. I don't want to draw any too grand conclusions based on any single regular season game, but on the concept of the gap closing, I think what was so interesting and what we have to remember about that postseason series in 22 is that the Yankees were really good, right? And I think the gap closing, this isn't to discredit what the Yankees have accomplished, but if the gap has closed, I do think it has as much to do with the Astros coming down as the Yankees going up, right? And the Astros had been the standard for so long. And through a variety of things, some of which you can blame them for, we've talked about some of the infrastructure stuff, some of which is just a rash of injuries, right? And they're calling on guys that they didn't expect. And by the way, injuries that include Justin Verlander, who, you know, started the season late and is still kind of settling into the season. All of those things contribute to it. But that is my interpretation, is that the gap maybe has closed, but I think it is more about the Astros coming down than everybody else rising up.
We don't make a whole lot of movie references on this show because we watch ball instead. But Mr. Schusterman, have you seen a movie called Hitch?
No, that's probably on the maybe. That's like in the range of films in terms of when it came out and like when I was watching that kind of movie, that it might have happened, but I can't. I probably won't get the reference, so go ahead.
There's a scene in Hitch where Will Smith is teaching, I believe it's Kevin James's character, how to kiss after a date. Mm-hmm. And he says, you go 90, they go 10, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I feel about the gap that's closed between the Astros and the Yankees. The Astros have kind of gone 90% of the way, and the Yankees have gone 10%. Right. I think the Yankees are better than they were last year, obviously. I don't think they were better than they were in 2022. But I think the Astros have just fallen off so abruptly and so suddenly and so completely that it's hard not to say the gap is closed, right? But I think that was on display last night.
And if we are, the last thing on this game, if we are going to zoom in on this individual game is, okay, Verlander gets smashed, whatever, you know, that happens. Luis Gil, Marinaccio, and Michael Tonkin holding this team to three hits is not ideal for the Houston Astros offense. That's kind of my takeaway. I guess Yordan, I don't know why Yordan got pinch hit for.
So Yordan fouled a ball off of his kneecap, I believe, in his second at bat. It was down on the ground for a long time.
Got it.
He ended up finishing that at bat and got walked. But I would be surprised if he played today. It looked
all
pretty,
right. Well, that's
tough.
more good news for Houston.
Yeah.
They're in it.
They're definitely, undeniably in it. If the Yankees win today on Wednesday and have a chance for the sweep on Thursday, it will be the showing up to my haters funeral meme to the moon.
I feel
to send the Astros 13 games under 500.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's kind of what the entire baseball internet has been kind of doing to Houston this year. Whether that's fair or not, but yeah. No, that's I mean, it's, you know, we talked about scenes, and this is a good transition. Well, okay, I we're going to talk about Toronto here in a second, but like we talked about, you know, on Monday, looking ahead at the series ahead for some of these teams that have been scuffling really hard, and you know, Toronto. Well, let's just do Toronto now while we're on the bad vibes here, and then I'll circle back to Arizona. So Toronto, you know, we were like after this weekend, we're like, oh gosh, this is. Things are not feeling good about the Blue Jays after what happened to them in D.C. Now they go to Philadelphia to face the team with the best record in baseball. And, you know, the lineup that the Phillies rolled out last night with, you know, at the bottom, you know, we got this was, I guess, the first off day for Bohm in a while. I know he had been, you know, riding this, hitting like 500 over the last 3 weeks. The bottom of their lineup, you know, Sosa, Clemens, Stubbs, you know, Merrifield batting second. And Jose Berríos, who's been having a really good season, gets knocked around. He gives up a home run to Cody Clemens, who was borrowing Bryce Harper's bat. Bryce Harper hits a home run as well, who was also borrowing Bryce Harper's bat. I don't know. I assume Bryce Harper was not borrowing somebody else's bat. Phillies went 10-1. They're 26-11. Jays fall to 16-20. And yeah, it's not going great for the Jays.
I want to draw the comparison back to the Astros game for a second, because
when
you have your best starter on the mound, it is, and you're struggling as a team, there's an energy that's like, oh, well, he's a stopper and he'll stop the flow. We're good today. And, you know, managers will parrot this narrative. But then when that doesn't go well and your dude gets crushed and then you're left staring at the wreckage and you're like, oh, well, I guess that's the best guy we have, right? It is very humbling, and I always like to see how teams bounce back from that. Barrios, 3 2/3, 7 hits, 8 runs, 8 earned. That is not a good day at the ball yard. Christopher Sanchez was excellent. I mean, the Phillies are really, really good. They have played nobody so yeah. far this season. It's been quite a cakewalk for them. But Cody Clemens, man, that's Roger Clemens' number one boy.
Yeah. So also, Barrios still, you know, getting 7 strikeouts in less than 4 innings. But what really stands out to me about this, first of all, also Spencer Turnbull pitching in relief. This was in a blowout. This is a guy who had one of the best ERAs of any starting pitcher in baseball. It seems like they're going to transition him to a bullpen role with Tylan Walker coming back and looking pretty okay. So credit to Tylan Walker as he rejoins the Phillies rotation. But yeah, in Toronto, we got to do a brief tangent on the concept of a stopper, because yeah. the stopper is a phrase that you sometimes hear in a bullpen context, right? Like one of my favorite phrases from the college baseball world that our friend Mike Rooney loves to use, which it just, I just love this, and we should bring this more into the MLB vocab, is the moment of truth reliever. that's what he Mike Rooney calls it, the moment of truth reliever, which is whatever, high leverage, whatever you want to say, stopper. But I just, there's something so funny about the term stopper for a starter. We need this starter to be a stopper today. Well, what are we stopping?
Because you would think that starting and stopping are opposite words. Yeah. They literally mean different things, starting and stopping. So yeah. when your starter is the stopper,
yeah.
it does make my brain feel like a pretzel. I will say, to me, it's more about stopping the bleeding. Yeah. I view... Yeah. Justin Verlander, in the context he was supposed to be yesterday, is kind of like mm-hmm. gauze,
yep.
right?
Yep.
He's a suture.
Yep. Yeah, but that's the thing. To your point before, and then what happens when he doesn't?
When it's then like, you're dead. Whoops. Then you bleed out.
And then what happens when? Unfortunately, Justin Verlander did not get the memo that he was supposed to be stopping, not starting yesterday.
Well, he was supposed to be starting and stopping, which again. That's confusing for a simple-minded person like myself. The Blue Jays are in bad straits. We've mentioned this before. George Springer, 579 OPS. Bo Bichette, 514.
Oh, what is OPS. Going on?
Alejandro Kirk, 582. Kevin Kiermaier, 520.
Yeah.
They've got a bunch of OPSs that look like slugging percentages.
Listen, we already said this. On Monday, we need to come out with some Fire City Connects as soon as possible, because otherwise the Rays are going to be skating right past you in the standings and not looking back.
Bury one. Toronto, Houston. Bury one in your head. Bury a team. Do it.
Okay. Well, right. We have already buried the Cardinals on Monday, and that hasn't gotten any better since then. So,
look, dude, there's 30 teams, and we have to think about all of them. So,
I know.
The sooner I can cross
okay,
a team
well,
off the list.
Again, whether I'm actually giving this team a zero, like if I have to pick one that I think is actually doomed as far as like making the postseason, I guess it's still Toronto. I think it is Toronto because of the division, right? They're obviously not in as deep of a hole. Well, I guess they are. Their record isn't nearly as bad. But standings wise, you know, Houston is 8 games back. Toronto is 7.5 games back. So they're both similarly. But, there's more likely to be an opportunity for Houston to climb back in than I think it is for Toronto. And so I think Toronto is I'm more concerned in that way. But it's close. They're both.
Yeah. Look, we are not advocates for anyone losing their jobs. However, for Jays manager John Schneider, the underpants are getting picante. The chair is getting steamy. Okay. It's getting wobbly over there.
Barrios, he struggled. But are your underpants starting to feel a little warm, John? Jake Mintz with Yahoo Sports.
Jake Mintz, Yahoo Sports. Are your underpants feeling warm, John? Thanks. And a follow up. What is the general temperature of the chair you're in? When you sit down, is it warm?
What is 50%, particularly pregame?
Yeah.
More than 50%. What is most of the pregame scrum? Oh, how's this guy that's injured doing?
Yeah. How are you doing? No one ever asks the manager how they're doing. It's always all... how are your players doing? No one wants to check in with the manager. Okay. How's your mental, John? Okay. How's your mental?
Bo Bichette, Jake, has a 514 OPS. All Bo Bichette has done in his career is hit. He is has been a hit machine as a big leaguer to a degree that the fact that I am looking at him hitting 189 in the beginning of May is staggering. Almost the middle of May is very concerning. Now, we've had a lot of really good players that have been struggling over the, this first month. And at some point, you have to trust that the talent within and the drive and the understanding of oneself as a hitter will eventually win out. And that appears to be what is happening with one Corbin Carroll, who last night took a 96-mile-an-hour fastball from left-hander Justin Wilson above the zone and hit a screaming line drive over the left center field fence. For it is one of those swings that, as Torrey Lovello said after the game, a lot has to go right in your swing to hit a pitch like that over the fence. And as Corbin Carroll talked about after the game, and I'm going to write about that today, he's been working it. He's been going through it. As we know, the numbers are not pretty. There have been some clear, like, okay, this is what he's struggling with. But he has been very intentional with what he has been trying to fix. He has reflected on what he was working on this offseason and how it did or didn't help him. And now we are starting to see him come out of it. The numbers are still not pretty, but Lovello put him in the leadoff spot last night. And he hits a three-run homer. He's got five RBIs, a couple hits. And this is much, much, much needed. Arizona has had a very imbalanced offense this year. They're also in something of a hole. Their starting pitching has generally done its job, but it was really nice to see Corbin Carroll get a swing there. And it was cool to hear him kind of reflect on getting to that point, because it has been a process. No guarantee he could still scuffle, but I really like what I'm seeing. And which is to say, I hope that Bichette is going through that process now too, and that he can come out of it for Toronto.
I had concerns when I met and talked to Corbin Carroll for the first time that he was too smart to be a good big leaguer. I think to be a good big league hitter, you have to be a little stupid, because you have to have an irrational self-confidence and you can't overthink things. You have to be able to analyze what's going wrong without letting it consume you. And you sent me the interview that Carroll gave about the mechanical adjustments he's been making that he gave after the game yesterday. And I thought the way he talked about it was the perfect combo of smart and dumb, where at some points he's saying things like, you know, my hinge is here and I have to work on my bat angle and I need to think about my vertical attack, blah, 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 like smart guy stuff. And then sometimes he just is like, yeah, you know, I'm just going through it, right? Yeah. Trying to get better every day. And so to me, that is the perfect combo of these two things from a mentality standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, it's not, I appreciated his candor last night. Of course, we always want players to be honest and give us their insight. It's not, they're not obligated.
Not me. Lie to me, baby. Lie to me.
They're not obligated to be as detailed as Corbin was last night, but it definitely gave some interesting stuff to dig into. And yeah, again, it's like we said, any game, you don't want to say, all right, well, there he is. Now he's fixed. Now he'll go back to being, you know, an all-star and one of the best players in baseball. It's possible he will. But, you know, that is something that it can make a difference. And that one swing like that, you know, I feel like a baseball cliche is, oh, you know, you just got to see a ball, you know, fall. You just got to see it, you know, hit grass, touch grass, as they say, right?
Find the garden.
Yeah, right. It's just like, oh, once you see a couple hits fall, then it's going to start going. It's like, that's one side of the baseball cliche spectrum. But the more compelling one is, it's like, man, like, if you can put a swing on like that, that's where it's like, oh, it is working. You know, that is what we are trying to accomplish. Because no one is trying, unless you're Luis Arraez, no one is trying to bloop balls in front of outfielders, right? It's nice when it happens. That's not the goal. And so when Corbin can kind of hit a real rocket to left center like that off a lefty was really, really impressive. So good for him. The Reds offense continues to stink. They now have the lowest batting average in baseball. I think I said that on Monday, but it certainly didn't get any better last night against Gallen. And today we've got Jordan Montgomery on the hill. I know he has not been great in his first starts with Arizona, that would be really big if Arizona can kind of get him going again. Because as I think you know, having been around Lovello a lot last year, he will relish if people want to doubt, you know, doubt his team.
Oh my God. He will find that doubt. Lovello loves doubt. Do not give him a reason to not believe. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Being around them in October is incredible. It'd be like, well, Bryce Harper got a hit. He doesn't think we can get him out.
So listen, you know, if you're a Jays fan listening to this, like, what is all this? Why are you being so nice to the D-backs when the Blue Jays and D-backs have the same record? And yeah, that's true. D-backs have the same record. They're in a big hole too. But this is a baseball podcast where we react to what we just saw and don't care about anything else. So sorry.
Duh. Deal with it. Two more quick things before we hop on out and interview Eitan Levine. One, Wilson Contreras, brutal injury, 6 to 8 weeks on the shelf. More bad news for the Cardinals. Ivan Herrera has been very good for them behind the dish this year. Excited to watch him play more, but Contreras has been that team's best hitter. And for a lineup that's just been going through it, losing him is a big, big deal. And then the other thing, NL Central was spicy last night with the Cubs almost blowing it. They were up 1-0 all game, not scoring any runs for Shota Imanaga. Imanaga allows a two-run homer. It's the first run I think he's given up since the Nixon administration on a two-run bomb from Jerks and Profar, who has been amazing. Cubs come back, walk-off home run. Michael Bush in the rain at Wrigley. First pitch in the bottom of the ninth. W flag on the field. Fans going nuts. Go Cubs go. Blasting over the speakers. It was love. Is Go Cubs Go good?
I'm very pro Go Cubs Go. And by the way, like, Imanaga has, after, you know, kind of introducing himself to the Cubs fans by declaring Go Cubs Go at his presser, like, he's really given that song some extra life, especially in a start like that, you know, where he does his job and then finally Bush kind of saves it later.
So I think Go Cubs Go is the perfect earworm. It is so accessible for a casual fan in a positive way. Mm-hmm. So my beautiful, wonderful, lovely fiance, who 2 weeks ago asked me, and I quote, "How do fans feel when games end in ties?" She asked me this. And I said, "What do you mean?"
About
and
baseball games.
About baseball. She said, "Like, when the games are ties, do people not like that?" And I said, "They wouldn't." And then she said, "Oh, right, that's soccer." Yesterday, I had the Cubs game on, Michael Bush walk off. They play Go Cubs Go. Boom. And she's singing along. Like, you know, like, that is the perfect level of accessibility for a fan. Go Cubs Go bops.
Yeah.
I have no other notes.
I agree.
Brewers, similarly great win at Kansas City, top of the ninth, down to their last out, down two runs. Willie Adamas at the plate, three-run bomb. And did you see the story about the Royals fans were giving him some stick on the on-deck circle? Being like, they were like, we want Willie. And he was like, "You sure?"
Oops.
And then after he homered, he came by and high-fived all of the Royals fans.
It was great. So on brand. I love Willie.
It was so Midwest, too. Yeah. Like, the Royals fans stayed and took pictures with Willie Adamas in the losing effort. Right. And that's Willie basically said that in the post game. He was like, "Yeah, that would never happen New York or anything."
And I love that too, because while obviously it's a tough loss for Kansas City, Royals are good. You can afford a loss like that. Like, that was like two good ball clubs hammering it out, you know? That's fine. That's great. But yeah, and also, yeah, so, you know, NL Central is right. Cardinals obviously lose. I talked about what happened with the Reds. And the Pirates just getting waxed by the Angels at home. So that's unfortunate, but we'll see.
Yeah. If Paul Skeens is going to make his debut this weekend, we need that news today.
I have a feeling it's going to drop after we record. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's not pitching this weekend. Anyway, anything else from you? But also, like, the Wilson Contreras injury. No, I mean, it was a horrible... That's a whole other conversation is how it happened, which is JD Martinez swinging the bat at a pitch. Like, this is not a backswing situation. Like, Contreras just kind of reached a little bit too far. He was a little bit too eager to catch the ball, and really bad, really, really unfortunate. And you kind of knew immediately, which sucked. Last thing, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll bring on Eitan. What a win for the Seattle Mariners after kind of an embarrassing... Oh, wait, two more things. Sorry. What a win for the Seattle Mariners. Cal Raleigh with a go-ahead grand slam. They kind of... Then they give up the lead. They win it then later. Well, I mean, offense, what a showing for the offense finally, I guess, in some ways, to score that many runs. I didn't know they were allowed to score double-digit runs. That's news to me. And yeah, Cal Raleigh now has 5 home runs from the right side of the plate. He had 7 in his career coming into this season. That's nuts. Like it has been a heavy split for his switch hitting numbers from both sides. And he has been a force as a right-handed hitter this year, which only makes him even better. He's one of the best catchers in baseball. And that is how he deserves to be treated. Last thing, Jake, the Washington Nationals are over 500 for the first time in 3 years. And Trevor Williams has been one of the best pitchers in baseball. It makes me happy because Trevor's a friend, but holy shit. I'm just going to say, not only this, Trevor, who allowed more home runs than any National League pitcher last year, has now allowed 0 home runs through his first 7 starts. Him and Reese Olson are at the top of the Why Haven't You Allowed a Homer Yet leaderboard. Mm. Both of them have faced over 140 batters this year without allowing a long ball.
I would argue with Trevor, it's how haven't you allowed a homer yet? Because this dude, I think a lot of it is good fortune.
Sure.
That he hasn't allowed a homer yet. Yeah. That is the case with everybody. But he was a freaking pitching machine at points.
Yeah,
last year.
And Trevor's talked about like he knows, like, yeah, I throw 89. So I gotta do anything I can to make sure that it doesn't look like it's 89. And he's found the right pitch mix, and he has credited, you know, we know the Nationals pitching development is not exactly the one to celebrate and say, look at these guys, they know what they're doing. He has very specifically said, bringing Sean Doolittle onto the staff has made a huge difference for me. That is awesome. That is a really, really cool story. And probably, listen, I mean, Sean Doolittle can't save the Nationals pitching, but listen, the Nats are solid, man.
He can't save it.
He's certainly helping.
Help it. Now, one guy who could maybe use Sean Doolittle for some pitching development is Eitan Levine. Our guest on this episode of Baseball Barbercast, Eitan is trying to break the Guinness World Record for most first pitches thrown in a year, 50. He is going around to minor league baseball stadiums to do so. He is, and I feel comfortable saying this, incredibly Jewish. And all of those things combined are very much up our alley. So we will be right back to talk to Eitan Levine. Probably about Judaism and definitely about baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. We now welcome our special guest who is trying to set a world record this year, Eitan Levine. Welcome to Baseball Barbercast.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I'm coming to you live from South Bend. I'm currently in South Bend Stadium to set this record. Like you said, I'm going to be breaking the record for most ceremonial first pitches thrown over the year. 50 first pitches. We're doing this to raise money for Make-A-Wish. In exactly 1 hour, I will be throwing out pitch number 5 at the South Bend Cubs. Thus far, I've done the Hartford Yard Goats, the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, the Nashville Sounds. This week alone, I'm doing the South Bend Cubs, the Joliet Slammers, which was just bought by Bill Murray, the Windy City Thunderbolts tomorrow, the Chicago Dogs on Sunday. We have 45 or 46 already booked. And of that, we have like 10 major league, which is super fun. The ones I can officially announce are the Mets, A's, the White Sox, the Giants, the Guardians, the Twins, the Brewers. The Twins, by the way, July 4th. Check that out. So it's insane what this project has become.
So I have 1,000 questions. I just want to start off and say, if you throw a strike for the White Sox, they might sign you on the spot. I mean,
So the unfortunate reality is that there's a set of rules for this, right? So Guinness, because this is approved and this is a record with Guinness, they said that it cannot be a professional player. I have to be unrelated to the team. Ooh. So I'm throwing out the pitch, but then the next day, the White Sox said I could middle relieve an inning if I wanted to.
I see. So I totally understand. That but it feels like kind of a catch-22, because if the White Sox offer you a contract, you kind of got to take that. but then you've done all this work for nothing. So, I mean, that's kind of a Sophie's choice. We can get there when we get there.
Let me just say, as the White Sox, you know, they offered me a position to throw a pitch, you know, like to do that. And, super kind. So I will say one of the best baseball teams in the world. So
top 30.
Top 30. Easily top.
Indisputably.
Easily top 35.
It depends on. Are the SoftBank Hawks having a good year over the NPB?
Yeah.
That is a real question. So, Eitan, my first pregunta for you is why? Why
are you doing this? One, you know, as always, this is all just to avoid law school, a feat that I have really perfected over the past couple of years. You know, last year I was on an Amazon show. I had a sports show on Amazon's network that famously exploded. Like, network doesn't exist anymore. But, you know, I've always done these weird stunty kind of things. My jobs have always been about branded content and doing like weird, you know, like the job I did right before this was at Storage Mart. Bought Manhattan Mini Storage and was like, oh, let's put a bunch of stand-up clubs into these storage units and we'll perform in there and stuff like that. So I have a resume of doing like odd, weird, big projects like this. So it's always for the bit. And then last year, so I've actually thrown out three first pitches historically before, you know, this project. And a lot of that came from the fact that I have a very big TikTok following doing Jewish content, doing a lot of man on the street things. So a lot of these baseball teams, they have Jewish Heritage Days. So one time they brought me, you know, so I did the Lake County Captains Jewish Heritage Day. Actually, what was funny about that was that I took a video wearing a Portland Pickles shirt, and the guy, they're owned by the same ownership group. So someone from that team saw this and then they contacted me to do that. So last year I did this thing with Lake County Captains where, you know, on the broadcast, if you watch baseball, you know, with the pitcher's back is to you and the batter and the catcher. And then there's always people in the stands. So they let me do a bunch of sketches where I had Horatio, the Lake County Captains, like Seagull mascot, lighting a menorah and just holding it like in frame in the back. At one point during the broadcast, it shows a toucan holding a Torah scroll.
Oh my gosh. What an achievement.
Which was great.
Wow. So Rambam could never have imagined how far we've come.
Rambam, thank you, ma'am.
We have gotten to throw out a few first pitches, and we are always tempted to make it, you know, oh, why would I just lob one in there? That's no fun, right? So, you know, Jake did a behind the back when we did one back in 2015. I tried to do like a perfect full ephus, like full toss, like throw it as high as possible and still have it land be a strike. Is there wiggle room for that? Are you planning on kind of working in some interesting elements to your first
pitch?
Or
are you just trying to fill up the zone?
Yeah, are you just playing it straight and making sure you complete the task?
I will say the first couple has been getting it over and not bouncing it. That's, you know, you got to walk before you run. And I have been walking very, very at a nice pace of getting it just over the plate. That ephus, by the way, is my default pitch at this point. So it does, you know, arc. I don't have that great of an arm. You know, my arm is good. Like I can get it over, you know, when I throw from the mound and stuff like that. There is a plan. I don't want to say anything too much yet, but we are going to be screwing around with these pitches a little bit. And there's another record I found yesterday on Guinness about highest first pitch. And that may be something that I want to attempt. I want to also, you know, I called the Savannah Bananas and I had a conversation with the Savannah Bananas. And the Savannah Bananas were like, this is great. We like what you're doing, but we throw out a first banana. So I had to then go back into, you know, Guinness's rules that they sent me and see if I could, you know, throw a banana and if that would count. The answer is yes, it technically does count. So okay, I'm good. Still Savannah Bananas. And then they didn't answer my email afterwards. So Savannah Bananas, if you're
classic
out there,
bananas.
Answer my freaking email. And then they let Kim Mulkey do it. So she threw out a first pitch. So
that's okay. Hey, listen, as long as
we got to get, get you in the Washington Post first and then we'll
you got enough on the calendar, but that's good to know. I'm excited to see how creative you get with this again. Cause that's what's cool. Because for us, you know, the few times we've gone to do it, you want to mess around and we've done that, but also, you know, when you only have one or two chances, you want to at least not totally embarrass yourself, but you've got some wiggle room here. It sounds like you're going to have a lot of opportunity, clearly a lot of opportunities.
And Gronk spiked it. I thought that was great. I will say, I have a conspiracy theory that Dr. Fauci threw the pitch bat on purpose because it would have been, I would not have trusted the vaccine if he like lasered it down.
Ooh.
Like, knowing
your point.
He's like a frail, old man.
Wow. Yeah.
Him chucking it to the left to me was like, it is good. Moderna.
Right. The vaccine has not altered his biochemistry.
Yeah. Right? The last thing I would want is a jacked Fauci.
Right. That's truly, truly horrifying. I have one last question for you, and it is about the stadium you are currently at. Now, you do a shtick that I love called Jewish or Anti-Semitic, and the South Bend Cubs gift store in left field is a former synagogue. Jordan and I have been there multiple times. It is repurposed. It is like a historic synagogue, and if you are Jewish and you walk into the gift shop, you immediately know that the bones of the place are a synagogue. So my question for you, Eitan, the synagogue gift store in South Bend, Indiana, Jewish or anti-Semitic?
So Jewish, but the gift shop itself, I will say, is insanely Jewish. That's so funny. That's also so baseball, Jews and baseball, it's been a thing for us for years and years, thousands of years, thousands of generations,
thousands of years.
Since the Talmudic era,
we've been
playing this. Rabbi Doubleday? The answer is as a Jew, it is what it is. We're like, Jews have a connection to baseball, whether it's the fact that there's a lot of accounting work that happens, whether it's the fact that we like, rules and strictness and stuff like that. It's always been like a piece of my life and everything. And, and what has been fun about this project also, I will say, is that going to all these stadiums have such interesting quirks. Like we went to the Hartford Yard Goats. They have literal live yard goats there. We went to the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp Stadium. That stadium is stunning. And they're adding like a full third team. Here, Hadlock Field, where the Portland Sea Dogs play.
We've been there, yep.
Beautiful. It's a mini Wrigley. And what I love about Portland, Maine in general is that the Sea Dogs play next to the Celtics G League team, and that G League stadium and that Sea Dog stadium is about a 7 to 10 minute walk from where the Bruins minor league hockey team plays.
Oh.
So it's essentially Dollywood for, Boston sports fans. And, what's been incredible about doing this project is I'm getting to go to all of these different stadiums and kind of experience the quirks of it. I love minor league baseball. Years ago, I wrote a pilot just by going to Cyclones games and typing, bringing my laptop with me and writing, a pilot there. And it's been, I love minor league baseball. It's so pure and fun. And right now, not to get mushy about it, we're in an era where it's very divisive. Everyone's pissed off at each other in America. We're heading into an election year. These minor league stadiums are one of the last bastions of like, hey, everyone, let's get along. It's about the fun.
I agree.
In America, there just ain't much of that left. And I love it here. USA, yeah. USA, baby.
Hell yeah, brother. Hell yeah, brother.
Maybe you've heard of it. Freedom and Liberty.
Freedom and Liberty. So I just, the South Bend gift store, when I first walked in, I was like, this is uncomfortable. They have repurposed the synagogue to sell tchotchkes. And then I did some research and I learned that had they not done that, they would have torn it down. And there is nothing more anti-Semitic than tearing down a synagogue. And so for that reason, I deem that gift store incredibly Jewish. Jordan Schusterman, do you have any final questions for our guest?
Eitan, where can people follow your journey? Thank you. This has been great to get some insight, but where can people follow over the next few months?
Totally. 50firstpitches.com. So we're doing this all to raise money for Make-A-Wish. You can donate there. On my Instagram itself, Eitan the Goalie, we're going to be putting up all the stuff, as we go along on these journeys. We're going to start putting out video content very soon. There's a documentary crew that is following me through this process. So at the end of this 6 month, journey, there is going to be like a thing made with it, which I'm super excited about. What that is yet, we don't know, because we're going to be, this is essentially 50 shoot days and thousands of terabytes of gigabytes of footage that at the end, I'm pretty sure we're going to have something great with.
Awesome.
Great.
All right. Well, Eitan, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And good luck today. I guess you've got to go. You got to go through this first pitch.
Yeah, I got to go. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Make sure you throw strikes.
What do you want me to do today for the pitch? Any requests?
I want you to throw it as hard as you can right down the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
Throw hard as I can. I will do Today, because it is Education Day, and I'll do this in front of the kids, I will throw as hard as I can this one for you guys.
Okay. Thank you.
Don't blow out. You got a lot of pitches left. All right. Thank you, Anton. Yeah.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Jordan, if you had five good days in a row, would you change your outfit? The Tampa Bay Rays are not. They are not changing their outfit. They are 5-0 since putting on the CineConnect uniforms for the first time. And it appears that they are just going to continue wearing them until they lose.
I love this. Now, listen, you know, it helps when you got the White Sox coming to town, exacting revenge on the Southsiders who, you know, swept them in Chicago earlier this season. But this has worked out quite well. I mean, this is a nice little homestand they've got. After the White Sox, they've got the Yankees coming to town. And if they beat the White Sox and sweep the Sox today, wearing the CityConnects again, hell yeah, they're wearing it. Are you kidding? Of course, I think they'd be wearing them on Friday anyway. I think that was the original plan. Now you know they're not going to take them off. The question is, will we take them to Boston and Toronto on the trip afterwards? I hope so if they haven't lost by now. But I know what you wanted to talk about here is just the logistics here, because this is probably a tough laundry assignment for the Rays clubhouse attendance.
Yeah, having to wear the same uniforms every day, I mean, that's a lot of laundry, baby. And the players aren't doing that. It's the clubby's job. And so quick turnarounds there. Often you will see, when it comes to laundry, teams, when they play day games, will not wear the same uniform tops that they wear that
that's
night
not an
before.
Accident. Yep.
That's not an accident. Yep. And if the Rays keep winning, that's just a load that the clubbies are going to have to shoulder. I mean, that's what winning baseball is all about. Wearing them against the Yankees, a team that is too precious to even have CityConnects uniforms, is a showdown of fun and seriousness that I hope ends up with Skady Ray taking all three W's.
Yeah.
It's been quite the stretch for Evan Longoria, for for Shred McGriff, for Gnarl Crawford. Skady Ray is the truth.
Yeah, it's a great point about the contrast between the Yankees buttoned up road grays that we'll see this
Our
weekend.
Our old road uniforms were too ornate. We had to get rid of the white trim. They do look better.
So I just love this. It's gone exactly as I could have hoped, but they will have to certainly prove it against a team that is not the Chicago White Sox. And I like their chances. On the topic of CityConnects, Jake, let's just get this out of the way. We did get another drop earlier this week, courtesy of the Detroit Tigers.
Growing on me like a fungus. Starting to like these more every time I see them.
Tell me about your thoughts. So the Tigers, Motor City. Can you believe they went with Motor City?
I actually can. I don't know how much time you've spent in Detroit.
Not as much as you.
When you go to Detroit, you think that the car stuff, the car motif, is something that people from the outside see about Detroit. It is not just that. Like, it truly is. It's more than a stereotype. You move around Detroit, and the amount of people driving American-made vehicles compared to, you just like don't see Toyotas to the same proportion that you would see in like every other American city. It really is a staple of that place. And so while it does feel somewhat cliche for someone on the outside, these are growing on me for a couple of reasons. I think the black and blue is cool. I think we need just enough dark colored pants, please.
Mm.
Like these with white pants would be good.
Yeah.
A couple other things.
Maybe team will pivot and go like super bright pants at some point, and everyone will hate those too.
I really like the patch on the side of the uniform with the Michigan State sign. I like the tire treads. I love the logo of the eyes of the blue tiger that are supposed to look like headlights.
Oh, wow. I don't even know. Okay, yeah. But where is that on the jersey? Is it on the jersey or is that just... It's like kind of like the Skate Ray. It's like one of the alts. Like it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like down on the bottom of it.
Oh, yeah.
However, the hat is just horrible. It says is Detroit.
Yeah.
It looks like something you would buy at an airport gift shop.
It feels like they spent a lot of time in the jersey and they're like, oh, right. Baseball players wear hats.
Because they have the best. I mean, they're.
We got to make a hat. Like, this is due tomorrow. Like, what are we going to do? Just put Detroit on it and call it. Make the font a little bit different. Throw that Detroit in italics and let's ride.
So I love because at the very end of the video they released, there is a 2-second clip of Eminem, Detroit's very own, watching, like, in the new Motor City top with another version of Motor City that says Mathers on the back, right? In the background, but he's not wearing the hat. Like, Eminem's not wearing the Detroit hat. Okay, so he knows his butt. I think they got to fix the hat. Other than that, I think these are pretty solid and they'll sell well.
Yeah. It almost
but finally
feels
like... we have a uniform that really like embodies the essence of the city. You know what I mean? That captures the grit, grind, and passion and perseverance of the people.
Wait,
in
you're
the
not
town.
Gonna hold on. You're not gonna believe this, Jake. But it's actually it's us against everyone. So
this city against
it's actually this city against the other against everybody else.
You know what I need? You know what I need? Yeah. I need a city disconnect uniform. And that's for New York. It would be, you know, the Hudson Valley or a Hamptons themed uniform. I need to disconnect from this city. And
like
get
the
out.
Boston one is like Cape Cod.
Cape Cod. You know, the DC one is Shenandoah. City disconnect uniforms for vacation.
I just, again, like, can we just quickly, 2024, we have like another 5 or 6 of these that we're getting this year.
These are great. I think that these exist is wonderful. MLB, we just didn't have fun uniform stuff for forever. And now we get every week we're getting something goofy.
We're still going to get Cleveland. We're still going to get Toronto. We're still going to get St. Louis.
And we're St. Louis is going to be nap time.
Minnesota. And we are still going to get the new Dodgers one.
Do you think Minnesota has enough time to do a sausage-themed one? Like a scratch and sniff?
They're like, wait, they go back to the designers. Whoa, hold on, wait. Can we please do this? They're like, oh, we just missed the deadline. So.
Ah, dang.
No. All right, Jake. 2 more topics before we say goodbye. The first thing probably should be in our Good, Bad, Ugly this week, but we cannot wait. We've already talked about it on our college baseball show over with our friend Steven Schock. But I'm sorry I couldn't reveal this to you on Baseball Barbacast, but I couldn't wait. Our producer, Andrew Hartz, when we said, hey, Andrew, we want to talk about this softball 20-inning game. And he's like, what? Well, Mr. Hartz, take a gander at this here box score, because earlier this week in the Division III NJAC New Jersey Athletic Conference tournament, Rowan University faced off against the College of New Jersey. And Emily McCutchen, the starting pitcher, starter, not the stopper.
No relation.
Too good.
No
they
relation.
They need a stopper. No relation to Andrew, spelled differently as well. Emily McCutchen threw 20 scoreless innings. Jake.
20.
Emily McCutchen threw 20 scoreless innings. 230 pitches. She faced 77 batters. Only 6 strikeouts. Only 5 walks. 11 hits allowed. 3 hit by pitches. 33 groundouts and 18 flyouts. 33 groundouts. Incredible infield work for the Rowan.
Keeps
props.
The infield engaged, man.
This is just an unbelievable performance. I was very eager to see. Now, what was so interesting about this game is that you think, oh, well, in softball, sometimes these teams only have one good pitcher, and so it makes sense that they stuck with Emily. No, because Riley Lutz has had a great season for the Rowan softball team as their number 2 pitcher. Why couldn't we get Riley some work in this game? I guess Emily was working so efficiently. I wondered, would Emily be back out there on Tuesday for their second game of the conference tournament? No, Riley takes the ball, throws a shutout in 7 innings over Kane. They now move on to the later rounds of this tournament, where I imagine Emily will take the ball again on Friday. But 20 scoreless innings, Jake, is just so incredible. I think my favorite thing, just digging into this box score, is the idea.
I don't think I've ever thrown 20 scoreless innings total, not even in a row, but over the course of my life.
Of your life, as Jake Scott thrown 20 scoreless innings. The box score, like, poor Julia Mayernick, the catcher for TCNJ, going 0-for-8 against the same pitcher in one game. Like, that's
all right.
That's
I'm seeing her now.
Yeah,
I'm seeing
like,
her.
Yeah, we're on her. We're on her. Like, we're hitting some ball. Like, it's the 15th. It's the 16th. It's the 17th. Oh man, it's so great. Softball's the best. Softball's the best. And this is the thing. It's like, what do we want pitchers to go deeper into games? Emily's like, I got you. Don't even worry about it.
And she's coming back out for the 17th.
She's only at 200 pitches.
She threw 3 1/3 softball games in this softball game.
Not cool. No, that's the bad math. Bad math. Softball is 7 innings, Jake, not 6. But it's okay.
No, I know that. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Three. Yeah, it's okay. Almost okay. 3. She almost went 3 CG shutty in the same day. Nice. In the conference tournament. Anyway, shouts out to Emily. You are my hero.
Jake, Emily McCutcheon, if you're listening to this, come on the pod. I want to know everything. How are you? Are you okay?
I assume she'll pitch this weekend, and we have got our eyes on Roe and see how far Emily can carry this prof squad in the tournament. All right, Jake, we have one more topic.
Yeah.
Before we say goodbye.
Yeah.
Let's save Sam Haggerty's clothing line for Friday.
As we do.
If you're like, what are you talking about? Save it for Friday. Jake, you were at the game last night, and you had an experience that I certainly can relate to, although not in quite some time. Tell me what happened.
So I'm sitting in that press box and I'm staring out at the Jumbotron in the outfield, trying to see how many pitches Justin Verlander has thrown, because I knew it was a lot because he was getting mushed. And I couldn't really make out the number on the board. I'm just doing some squinting.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was like, what is that? And I turned to friend of the show, Matthew Ritchie of MLB.com, who's sitting next to me, and I said, I think I need glasses. And he goes, yeah, you squint a lot.
Was Richie wearing his glasses?
He was wearing his glasses. Yeah. 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 He was like, you squint a lot. And I said, I do. And so I made an appointment. About an hour from now, I got to head over to the eye doctor, going to stare at some tiny little letters and find out just how bad my vision is. I think this is I am fine. I think I'll be a great glasses guy. I think I'll crush it. However, I don't know if our podcast can endure with two glasses guys. You're the glasses guy. You embody glasses.
That's true.
I don't. I'm the jock. You're the brain. We have our roles. Yeah. And I am sorry that my body has let us down.
It's okay. So contacts are a thing.
No.
And you can't lose them as easily as you can lose glasses, Jordan, which you will definitely do.
Jordan, I'm going to impale my iris if I use contacts. I am going to end up spilling the fluid everywhere. There's going to be contacts lying around my home. I'm going to get baseball dirt in them.
Long way to go in this eye journey for you. But again, the story, this being the origin, is appropriate because this is literally what happened to me 10 years ago.
I remember.
On our first road trip.
I remember.
It might have been early. No, I think it was. I mean, it's definitely in high school, but like, it was like going to minor league games, especially where we're not in press boxes. We don't have like the scoreboard was really the main source of information, you know, in 2013. And I was stubborn then, but not for very long, because I was like, you know, it's cool being able to see. And so I was like, let's do something about that. I think the funniest outcome possible here is that you go to the eye doctor and you find out that your vision is worse than mine and has been for a while. I think that
what
would be
is one, the scale there?
One of the we can talk about that once you get some information. We're not going to do that on the show.
Okay.
but we'll see. We'll see. Storyline to watch. Thank you for
Me not to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm proud of you though. I'm proud of you though. This is good. All right. Well, that is a storyline to watch, Jake. Jake's vision. We will maybe get an update on that on Friday. But until then, thank you all for listening to this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbercast. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you to Eitan for joining us. As a special guest, you can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. And we will talk to you later this week.
Good thing you don't need good eyesight to listen to a podcast.